Hey, welcome to Juno Afternoon, July 7th. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today. And today we're going to be talking about stars. First, the Perseverance Star, that's the Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous intensive series of 3 week-long programs, starts up on July 17th, and we'll find out how to get your kids involved and also how to see the final results. Next, the great Bob Armstrong is going to be here to tell us about his first Friday event tonight at Hearthside Books. Then Steve Kosis is here, also Rosemary Walling, and they're here from the Marie Drake Planetarium to talk about the first Friday happenings there. And staying on that theme of first Friday, at the Juno Artist Gallery, that's always a mandatory stop, and we'll be speaking with Lori Craig from the gallery and featured artist Rick Kozlerich, who is going to be creating a very personal exhibit. That's all ahead for you. I hope you'll stay with us on Juno Afternoon. Well, a hiccup there. Sorry. Well, the weather for the next week is no hiccup at all. It's going to be amazing. It's sort of following the trend of the general trends in climate. It's going to be heating up. And really, the forecast for the next up through next Wednesday night is partly cloudy, partly sunny skies all the way through. Highs in the 60s to low 70s, and feels like it's getting a little bit hotter than that as well. So that's it, folks. It's officially summer, so go out and enjoy it now.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ani kak, gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon, your community-supported public media station here. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today on this sunny, sunny July Friday. And joining me now is Rio Alberto. Rio called in. And Rio, thanks for coming to the show. I appreciate it.
Gracias. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you joining us here remotely. And this has just become such an institution for summers in Juno, and that's the STAR program at Perseverance. So tell me about your role at the STAR program this year. You're heading it up?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am currently the Director of Marketing and Engagement with Perseverance Theater, and I have the distinct honor and pleasure of kind of inheriting, like you said, this institution that is the STAR Summer Theater Program. It's the Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous at Perseverance, which has taken many forms here over the decades. But myself, Virginia Roldan, who is the drama advisor at Juno Douglas High School, Leslie Ishii, artistic director at Perseverance Theater, and Mahogany Magnetic, who is a performance artist currently completing her PhD up in Fairbanks. The four of us inherited this in 2020, I want to say. And since then, it's kind of evolved into a different sort of program than what it used to be in the past, where it used to be sort of like young theater artists, you know, middle school and high school, their opportunity to learn some summer stock style, experience with developing and putting up a show here in a few weeks. We're pivoting to work on more skills building for students.
Yeah, and so, that was my understanding in the past was that every student kind of learned a little bit about like kind of doing it all, right? From soup to nuts sort of. But yeah, you've divided it out into 3 separate intensive weeks. Is that kind of the idea?
Correct. Yeah. So just kind of with where we're at now as a team and as an organization, and as we remain in recovery from COVID, like many arts organizations here in Southeast across the state and even broader throughout the lower 48 as well, we're trying to look at what exactly is the gap that we can fill for students here in Southeast. And so we've divided it. Every year we get kind of different requests from parents and students, you know, like, we want to do a full musical versus kids that are like, I don't want to do a musical. We used to do musicals and I couldn't stand them. I want to do this instead. Or like, I want to actually focus on playwriting, or I want to learn more about directing. And so this year we've broken it up into kind of a choose your own adventure style track. So our first week, what we're starting with is playwriting and directing. We're working with Mahogany Magnetic is going to head up our playwriting with a special guest teacher from New York. His name is Ariel Estrada, is going to be coming in and teaching for students. And we have yet to finalize some details, but we'll also be doing a special offering for adult playwrights as well, too. So we'll be doing our first week coming up on the 17th through the 21st is going to be playwriting and directing, and playwriting led by Mahogany.
Can I ask you one thing just about the order of it? So it seems like you're kind of doing it in the order that you would have to implement it during a show as well, right? Playwriting and directing.
Correct.
And I think that's something that maybe is really going to be instructive for young people as they're coming to this, if they're new to the theater. How much work ahead of time the director has to do before anyone's even in the room, right? They're working with the playwright. They're interpreting the material. They're forming their ideas and a concept about how they want to present the show. And it seems like that's going to be a pretty interesting part for young people to understand that that's a role that happens in theater.
Absolutely. And yeah, to your point, we structured it such that you start with the playwriting and directing. So starting with either script development or devising kind of the vision for what you want the piece to look like. And then our second week is going to be acting. So then you are going to be able to get on stage. And now for students that have been in the first week and have written their own piece, everyone's going to be writing a 10-minute scene. So for students that have participated in the first week as playwriting, directing, now they get to get on the other side of the table and actually get into their bodies with the acting track and do an acting intensive for the full week where they can actually choose to work on the piece that they've developed, or we'll assign them monologues and scenes. That one will be taught by myself and Taylor Miller Fisher. Some folks might know her as Timo. We're going to be leading up that acting camp for the second week. And then kind of to your point as well, you know, these are all building upon each other. Our third week is going to be musical theater and production. So for the students that are really just like gunning to sing a song and learn more about musical theater, we'll be doing that whole camp. So students will learn and work on a solo, a duo, and a group number that will be choreographed by our very own, Juno's very own, Kelsey Riker. Kylie Ferguson will be leading the musical theater sort of track. And then for the students that don't want to do the musical theater but still want to be involved for that third week, once again, we've got production there. So if you work with a piece from playwriting, then into directing, and then into acting, now we can get into producing the piece. We can learn more about sound, lighting, technical elements, and kind of compiling that into what is going to be our final showcase, which will be kind of strung together and devised from the pieces that the students will craft and create over the course of 3 weeks. So that's kind of the flow of it right there with playwriting, directing. Like you said, you get the view of kind of the vision of bringing the story to life, acting with where you get it into your body, and then musical theater and production where you get it up on stage.
You know, it's so fascinating to think about playwriting and directing as something for 12 to 18 year olds, because, you know, I remember doing a few school plays and, you know, it was just a given that the director was, of course, the music teacher or the theater teacher. Right. I mean, you didn't even get presented with the idea that one of the students could be a director, you know. And of course, that's such a loss. Right. Because young artists are going to have completely different interpretations of how to do things. I love the idea of them being able to take something, playwright it, and then bring it to fruition and really learn the limitations of what they wrote, like what will work and won't work. That stuff must be really interesting to see young people go through that process.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to your point, you know, this is all about becoming a better storyteller, right? Like, I know plenty of people that started with acting that had no real interest in acting, but always knew that they wanted to be a director. But that's kind of what you have to do first, right? At least,
yeah, you got to get into theater,
like,
right?
You said, the teach. yeah, that's your foot in the door right there.
And you know, another thing that you said that was so interesting is also boy, if you can't sing, you got to at least pretend you know how to sing, right? Because you're always going to do a musical. Like, it's just funny how, you know, the first, when you said that, it was the first time I kind of realized, yeah, you know, it was always musicals. Like, you know, even with my daughter and even generationally, it's like, oh, yeah, well, it's always musicals. Of course, those are fun to see. But if you don't happen to be, if that doesn't happen to be in your talent pool, you're kind of out of luck.
Right. Right. And how can you, how can we make sure that there's still room for you to participate, even if that's not your wheelhouse?
Like, yeah, right.
I was raised in the musical theater, but now you won't catch me doing a ton of musicals anymore. I'm very selective with my projects now, but also, like you had said, there's no reason why a young artist can't have the vision or at least learn some of the language and tools that it takes to be a good director. Because we are, you know, here at Perseverance, we're, our goal with all of our programming is, you know, of course, theater by and for Alaskans, but fostering this next generation of artists. Like, these are the students that are going to inherit this building. I'm not going to be here forever. And, you know, when they come to an age of, you know, choosing to be a part of this institution in one way or another, we want to make sure that they're equipped with the skills and also they feel confident and they know, I've been doing this since I was a kid. Of course I can direct the show. I can put up a pretty show in my sleep.
I love that idea.
What we want.
Yeah.
Or
I love that idea, the fact that, you know, a kid could be 18 years old and know, hey, I've been directing plays for 6 years. I mean, you know, that's just a really cool and powerful way to think about the theater for young people.
Absolutely. And as we move forward and we start to like expand our programming, you know, as we bounce back from COVID and we are able to increase our capacity, you know, what does it look like for us to provide something for high school level students to actually try to produce their own full length plays that they've written, right? You know, maybe there's a play lab in the making or something like that.
I love it. That's such an exciting way to think about how to get people introduced into the art form of theater. And because that theater, you know, contains all these disciplines within it, not just acting, which is sort of the way that, you know, usually we throw young kids. That's what they do. You know, maybe kids don't love the stage. Maybe kids, you know, there's all kinds of different talents that it takes to produce a show. As you're well aware, it's so exciting to think about introducing that to kids early on, especially when it comes to playwriting, directing. Those are, you know, project management is what directing is, right? And I mean, those skills translate directly to lots of different things in the world.
Absolutely. And like at the core of our camp, you know, we're trying to instill the values of self-determination, autonomy, communication, and teamwork. And just providing a safe atmosphere for kids to just explore and be kind of weird. Like I was fully just a weird kid that found my way into theater. And now I make it everyone else's problem because it's my job to, you know, but
everyone's
all,
a weird kid, right? I mean, if you're not a weird kid, come on, you're missing out.
Exactly. Everyone's a weird kid. And having a space where we can say, okay, cool. You want to be here because your friends are here and you have multicolored hair. That's great. Even if you don't want to be on stage, what can you do in terms of, like, do you like drawing? Do you like writing? Do you like math problems? You know, like there's going to be a place for you in the theater somewhere. And we're just about supporting kids in that journey to discovering what that might look like to them and where we'll take them eventually, because there's a lot of power in allowing these students at this age as well to be playwrights and to say your story has value. Yeah. And your story can teach us something about the world that we have no idea. I do not know what it looks like to be a teenager in 2023 right now. That was years ago for me. And so to be able to see the world through the eyes of these young artists allows us to learn as staff and hopefully as a community as well.
Well, it's really great. It's ambitious, but it's such a cool way of working with the idea of a summer theater program. Well, so if folks are interested in getting their kids involved in this, what do they need to do? What do they need to, what information do they need?
So spots are filling up pretty quickly here. We're starting here on the 17th, but I would say I probably have about 5 spots left for each week. So if folks want to sign up, you can go online to ptalaska.org/star-2023. That's ptalaska.org/2023. Or you can email me directly with any questions. R. Alberto at ptalaska.org. So it's first initial and then last name, at ptalaska.org. We have scholarships available. Our partners over at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute are providing scholarships to Alaska Native students to attend for free. I also have some discretionary funds to provide scholarships to students as well. So the cost of tuition should not be an obstacle. Also, we are providing meals and bus transportation at no additional cost. So transportation or, you know, food should also not be a barrier to being able to participate. We want to make this as accessible as possible to everyone. So I think folks have got it, but just, yeah, once again, it's ralberto@ptalaska.org if you have any questions about how you can get involved or sign your student.
Well, that's great, Rio. It sounds like a fantastic program, as always, but this is an interesting new way of looking at it, and that's going to be really exciting, I'm sure, for the kids that are participating. And then season opening production, you want to mention that real quick?
Yeah, so we have officially announced our 45th season. 2023-2024 is opening up with Hedwig and the Angry Inch. That will be directed by our artistic producer.
<All right>.
Our artistic producer, Joseph Biagini, will be directing, and I will be starring as Hedwig, and Salisa Soul will be coming to the stage as Yitzhak. So that's going to be coming up. We open September 15th is our opening, and we run in Juneau until October 1st. Tickets are on sale now at ptalaska.org for our season opening. So, yep, here we go. Hedwig and the Angry Inch, making a comeback to Juneau.
All right, Rio. Well, thanks so much for updating us on that and for letting us know about the STAR program that starts up on July 17th, runs through August 4th. It's got three different kind of components to it. And as you said, there's about five openings or so in each one of the 3 weeks. So if you have a kid that's interested, know of a kid that might be interested, even if it's a kid that may not have all the means or the transportation to get there, Perseverance will make it happen for you. Rio, thanks so much for letting us know about it. And we'll see you back up here in Juneau when you get here.
Thanks so much. Yep. I'm actually enjoying the sunshine out in Juneau right now.
You're in Juneau. You're just calling.
Okay. Well.
All right. Well, good. Enjoy the sunshine, man. All right. We'll see you.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein, and I have the distinct pleasure of having in the studio with me someone who's just really enriched the lives of a lot of us that live here in Juneau. Bob Armstrong's here. Bob, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Bob's a naturalist, and how would you describe your what are your professional credentials? Author, photographer.
Well, I worked for the Department of Fish and Game for, I can't remember, 20 years. And back then you could retire after 20 years because their death rate among biologists was very similar to policemen and firemen.
It was hazardous duty, basically, yeah.
So we got the same benefits. So I retired quite young, but I was always interested in everything in nature. And so that's what I've been enjoying.
And you've just been pursuing creating amazing resources in the form of books and photography and field guides. And even as we're looking here, even children's books and more and more and more. I was just telling you, I think I have about five of your books on my shelf that are dog-eared and we look at all the time just because anytime we're out and see something unusual or just see something we want to verify what we've kind of seen, we get out one of your books. So. Anyway, it's great to have you in the studio, and you're here because over at Hearthside Books tonight, you're going to be signing some books and meeting with people that want to come in and get books signed. And Katrina Wolford is also on the line with us right now. Katrina, are you hearing us?
I am hearing you. Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're over there at Hearthside right now arranging and plenty busy, but also you're going to be having, I understand that Ben Higdon will be there playing a little guitar as well.
Yes, he will be our accompaniment tonight for Bob's signing.
Sounds great. Now, do you have, as a book owner, what are some of the hot Bob Armstrong books? What are the hot sellers among the Bob Armstrong books?
A book owner or a book buyer for the store?
Well, either. I mean, what really gets the action?
Well, I think as just a good citizen of Juneau, I own them all.
Yes.
Like I should.
That's right. I think it's a requirement. I think when you get to 10 years in Juneau, it's a requirement. You have to have all of Bob's books.
I think so. I think some of the best sellers for us are The Birds of Alaska Guide probably is the top, right? And then the Nature of Southeast Alaska. They're all so good. One of my very favorites is the one he did with John Hudson, which is the Dragonflies of Alaska Field Guide. And there's just nothing else like it. And his children's books are wonderful. So
when did you start doing the children's books, Bob? Is that something that has been happening for quite a while or?
We've only done really two of them. One was on marmots called Whistlers on the Mountains. and then that one on Dragons in the Ponds.
I'm holding it right here. Really nice, big, full-color book that talks all about the life cycle of dragonflies and has amazing photography of damselflies and dragonflies and all of these great creatures that live around the ponds. And it looks like the creatures that like to eat them, like a robin as well. Represented here, a falcon, even American kestrels. I didn't know they ate dragonflies.
Yeah, they can capture them in midair.
They go at him on the wing. Yeah, wow. Now I wanted to ask you something before I forget. I wanted to ask you something, Bob. I think I saw two sandhill cranes land over at the dike trail today. I was walking there midday. Does that sound right?
It could be. They do occasionally land here in Juneau.
They came in. They were cranes. Their necks were out. Yeah. They were doing that, and they had that really gawky way of coming in for a landing. I didn't see the red on their head distinctively, but they looked to me like sandhill cranes that I've seen up in Creamer's Field or something in Fairbanks. Yeah. That
very well could have been.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well,
that's good to know.
That was a good sighting then. Yes, I wanted to pass that on to you while you were here. Well, Bob, tell me a little bit. Are you working on a book right now?
Not really. What I mostly do now is try to find something in nature that's really fascinates me.
And just dive in deep on that?
Yeah, and then try to learn as much as I can and try to take as many photos of what is happening as I can and then put together a PDF on what I've learned.
I think you were doing that with beavers not long ago. Do I have that right?
Yeah, we did a book on beavers around the Mendenhall Glacier, but the exciting thing I'm working with now with Marlon Bowles is a book on the orchids of Juneau.
Oh, really?
And what pollinates them?
Oh, I don't know. To my layman's eyes, I don't know that I've ever seen an orchid in Juneau, but I'm sure I have without knowing it.
Yeah, there's a fair number of them here.
What are some of the ones that people would most typically be able to see?
Probably the most abundant would be the white bog orchid. Almost any of our meadows eventually have them coming up. Just trying to determine what pollinates them and so on. There's one that, according to the literature, they don't know what pollinates this particular orchid, and it's called the Northwestern Twayblade.
So have you set up an orca cam?
A lot of different things. But Marlon and I have worked with them for a couple years now, and the only insects we've ever seen come to them are Dryomyza flies. And then another fly, which is common name is carrion fly, but both of them go to salmon carcasses and lay their eggs. And the carrion fly will even, I shouldn't say this, but go 6 feet underground and layer eggs on a human.
Oh, God.
Then the kids eat the human.
I love knowing that kind of stuff. Oh, my God. So in some ways, we would almost maybe consider them to be pests or gross or. But actually, they may be. You haven't maybe verified this completely yet, but they may be one of the sole pollinators of this very unique. Yes,
we think so. And what we think is happening is the orchid is releasing a putrid odor that attracts them, because we don't see any other insects coming to the orchids and of that particular orchid.
And this is something that, in the little I know about orchids, that can be orchids can be very specialized pollinators, right?
Oh yes.
So they can emulate a wasp, a very specific wasp, and that gets the male wasp to come in and things like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting thing. Now, is that also like chocolate lilies? Are they similar to that? They kind of release a
the chocolate lily
kind of a poo smell, right?
One of the names of it is Lady on the Pot, but it definitely releases a putrid odor which attracts blowflies, and that's the main pollinator. And blowflies are the ones that lay their eggs on salmon carcasses, and the maggots devour the carcasses, and on and on and on.
So it's kind of gross that, like, we would think it's like, ugh, but incredibly important animal, really, breaking down those nutrients in the salmon carcass, all that kind of thing. I mean, they're an incredibly important part of the ecosystem.
In my humble opinion, I think the blowfly is one of the most important insects in Alaska. They occur throughout the state and providing huge amounts of nutrients to fish streams and so on, and then a lot of food for juvenile birds.
But we're still allowed to swat them if they land on us, right?
Yeah.
But you'd prefer we didn't?
Well, I've been learning a lot of literature now is coming out about the emotional lives of insects. And you begin to realize that they're not that much different than humans.
That's really fascinating. They have a complex emotional life.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something I had never considered, really.
Yeah, there's a whole book now written by Jonathan Balcombe called Superfly, and it's really well worth reading. It talks about the behavior and so on of flies. And
Well, that's fascinating. Well, Katrina, let's talk about the event tonight that's happening. When is it happening? Where? And what can people expect? And what should people bring, copies of Bob's books and all that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yes. Well, it's going to be at 4:30. It starts at 4:30 at our Merchants Wharf store. And I think, and Bob, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think authors are honored when people bring their book collections in to have them signed. And certainly we'll be selling books there. Ben Higdon will be our musician for tonight on guitar. And then we always have incredible snacks, and we're very cheerful booksellers. And so it's a little, you know, a little bit of a party, which is great.
Well, really cool. And that's so exciting to hear about the work you're doing now. Do you think that work is an idea to kind of create that and form that into a book? Or is it just kind of doing it and you'll let it kind of take its course?
The most exciting thing for me is to observe something in nature and then wonder about it. And then to find an expert out there that knows about it, and then coordinate with them on a book. And
so that's sort of that's your focus. But then if a book comes out of it, great.
Yeah.
But really it's really
for me, the most important thing is a learning process.
Yeah.
And then I enjoy sharing it once I get to a certain point, but I just enjoy, I'm just amazed by what happens in nature. A lot of things you see, then you try to find out why they're doing something, and a lot of it's not known.
Are you seeing trends right now that you maybe haven't observed before, climate-based or other kind of things that are either of concern to you or that you've just noticed?
Oh, lots of concerns, yeah. I probably shouldn't mention this, but
every time you say that, you say something really interesting. So go ahead and mention it.
Well, I started looking at all the different birds that were going to our landfill and why they were going there and how many were there and so on. And then I started doing a lot of literature search on landfills and birds associated with them and everything. And there's no doubt about it. They're releasing a considerable amount of toxins to the environment.
The birds, because they carry the garbage out from the
landfill. They carry the garbage out. Right. They shred the plastic bags. And even, you know, it's very popular in Juneau to put dog waste in plastic bags. And then the plastic bags are thrown in the garbage. And then they go to the landfill. And then the plastic shreds up and there's a couple creeks that go right by the landfill that empty into the Mendenhall wetlands. And I'm pretty convinced that there already is a lot of problems on the wetlands with toxins and that a lot of the invertebrates are dying and a lot of the fish that use the wetlands. And probably even affecting DIPAC hatchery fish. And
it's really interesting to think about. It might not even be because of a structural issue with the landfill, but because birds are the conduit that's taking this waste away from where we're trying to concentrate it.
Yeah,
kind of an unintended
consequence. Both ravens and eagles take bags of waste to the trees right above Vanderbilt Creek there, which empties out into the wetlands.
I think we've all observed that, right? We've all seen the bags in the trees, and we've all seen that anyone who's driven by Vanderbilt Road there has seen that, yeah.
But I'm hoping to get a toxicologist and a bacteriologist to do some studies. I mean, first we've got to know that there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then figure out how to solve it.
Well, it's so interesting to hear that you're continuing to work on these things, not just observing beautiful things like orchids, but also being concerned about these kind of larger issues and the environment in general that we live in. I mean, we all live in Juneau at one point or another, we're here because of the environment we live in, no matter what we do for a living. So anyway, Bob, so good to talk to you and great to just get a great information download from you a little bit about what you're working on right now. And if you want to go meet with Bob and have him sign a book and go buy a book at Hearthside and have him sign it right there, now's your chance. You can do it tonight starting at 4:30, just in an hour from now, over at the Hearthside location in the Wharf Mall there downtown. And Bob will be signing books, and Ben Higdon will be playing guitar, and Katrina Wolford will be there to answer your questions as well. And Katrina, thanks so much for joining us. And
thanks.
Bob, thank you as well. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you talking to you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you for confirming, at least partially, that I may have in fact seen a sandhill crane there. I think I did. Pretty sure I did. All right. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
A black hole sun there. All right, a little Soundgarden by request of our next guests. Steve Kosas is here from the Marie Drake Planetarium, and Rosemary Walling is here from Marie Drake Planetarium. And it's a First Friday happening at Marie Drake Planetarium tonight. So welcome to both of you. And what's happening for First Friday at the Planetarium? Who wants to start? Steve, you start.
Yeah, Steve will start. Do not fear, Steve is here. Well, thanks, Andy. The Marie Drake Planetarium, we've been in town since 1967. And in 2019, we put in a brand new projector, digital, from Bremerton, Washington, Digitalis. And we're doing First Friday tonight, starting at 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. And we have some amazing full dome videos. Our system fills the 30-foot dome. So we're going to look at black holes and the Big Bang and galaxies. And if anyone has requests, we can fly to the moon, or we can fly to Jupiter, or set the controls for the heart of the sun. And with our new system, all digital.
Tell me about that Digitalis Lambda projector. Well, tell me what that is. What is that, one of those things that kind of has two big bulbous ends, and it's like one of those big. Am I sort of on the right track, or is it totally different now, all digital and different?
Well, it's got two main pieces. It has a computer, so it's digital, and so it's got a language you can program it to do many things, and then it also has like a humongous projector that has a fisheye lens on top, so okay. It's a single lens. And it replaces the old Spitz Starball.
That's what I'm thinking of,
so
right?
Yeah. Starball is like it comes up from the bottom.
It's cool.
It looks cool.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
But right next to it, we have this new digital system. So it allows us to do almost anything, you know, one of the larger planetariums can do.
What does one of those run? I mean, what does it take to get one of those kind of? It must be tens of thousands of dollars,
it's
right?
It's about $100,000.
$100,000. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. And it's all friends of Marie Drake Planetarium have been kind of getting that together and organizing that.
2019 was the big push. And we had a couple of large donations, one from Rasmussen Foundation and one from Kensington Mine Crewer. And then we had a matching grant from the Black Wolf Fund at the Community Foundation, and we had just lots of little donations. So it added up. And
well, it's such a community resource. It's just great that that was able to come together.
Yeah, it is a community resource, and that's really what we want it to become. So if people have ideas for what they would like to do in there, they can just let us know.
Yeah, very cool. So what's the program for tonight look like? As a first Friday, that's a fun idea to have the first Friday at the planetarium. So, yeah, what's the idea behind it?
Well, the idea is we can have people make requests. Like I said, we have a database with the Digitalis system, which made in the USA, Bremerton, Washington. And let me just say that the Spitz system, which is analog, was also made in the USA from Pennsylvania. And so we have some full dome videos we can show on different astronomical subjects. And also, like I said, we can fly to objects that are in our database.
Yeah.
Our solar system, the Kuiper Belt, the galaxy itself, or other galaxies. So if people want to see some of the features of the Digitalis, it's there.
What are the new telescopes that are now out there, and you know, these incredible new systems? What is that doing to the world of planetarium? I mean, that must be increasing a thousandfold the ability for you to show what's out there.
Oh, yes, exactly. All these new telescopes that we'll mention, the James Webb Space Telescope, they have public portals, and you can get images and information and data from the NASA public portal. We can get those images and we can display them through our system and then discuss them and take questions on it.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you're going to know it better than me, but the Deep Array, is it the Deep?
The Hubble Deep Field.
The Deep Field.
And the Ultra Deep Field.
The Ultra Deep Field.
And the Ultra. Yeah.
They're mind-blowing.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, of course, that's kind of the business that you're in, is like blowing people's minds in a way, because like it's when we start thinking about these things that are galaxy and universe related, it's incredible. But
so the James Webb Telescope can take a little bit bigger field than the Hubble could, but more importantly, it's in the infrared. And because distant light stretches when it gets here. So if you want to look really, really far distances, which is like looking into the way far past, it's in the infrared. So Hubble could only see so far because it was mainly in the optical with a little infrared, but the James Webb is all infrared.
And I so never knew that was the difference. That's
they're able
really
to see far back in time now.
I just always thought it was just more about they were just higher definition.
Bigger.
Yeah, but it's also
high resolution,
yeah.
But it's also the wavelength matters.
Yeah. Wow, fascinating. And as you say, when you see these objects, we're really looking 13 billion years into the past.
Yeah.
That's that light that's reaching us now is that old.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Some of the farthest light is visible because of gravitational lensing. So some of the clusters of galaxies that are in between us and, say, a really distant galaxy, what happens is that light gets bent around and amplified in the process. So that's one of the ways that they can see even farther back is using that effect.
So they purposefully look towards a large object of some sort that they know is going to create this effect?
Sometimes. I look at a lot of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
And there's, I mean, if you take one of the fields, you're going to find something in there that's got gravitational lensing going on.
Yeah.
And that's kind of related to something we're doing next week. We're having an astronomy camp. It starts Monday. It's one of the summer camps that we're doing. It's the only one we're doing, but it's with the Juno Economic Development Council, one of their STEM camps. And so it starts Monday. There's still some spaces. So I'd like to put out the word for middle and high school students to come join us. They can go to the JEDC website and register. We still have space. And it's on seeing the universe. So we're going to talk about everything related to how we know what's out there. Like you can start with your eye, backyard telescopes. We'll do some stuff with remote robotic telescopes where we can put in a request for something that's taken, you know, halfway across the planet. And we'll do a little bit of working with some images, like from the big telescopes, how they make these wonderful, colorful images out of the real data.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me. Like, I don't understand that. It's all infrared. So how are we seeing? But
there's different wavelengths at infrared, and you want to show which one's hotter than another part.
Gotcha.
And so sometimes they take filters that are very fine. So they'll look at just a really narrow and another really narrow. Then you have to assign a color to each one in order to get the whole picture out of that. Mm. And we're fortunate. David Hansen, a volunteer with the planetarium, he's a serious astrophotographer. So he knows a lot about working with images.
Oh, wow.
And he'll be giving us some of his time.
Well, that's cool. What an opportunity for. So you're saying, you were saying middle school and high schoolers is sort of the target audience for that,
that's
for that
right.
camp.
Yeah.
And it's a week long?
It's week long, 9 to 4. And it'll be fun. It'll be new.
Yeah. And this weather's not going to last forever, man.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little competition there, isn't there?
That's right.
Oh, but, you know, I don't know what's going to happen later in the week.
That's
maybe
right.
Rain.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, you were saying that tonight's a night of requests. What are some of the top requests that come in?
Oh, usually about black holes, because we have a number of computer visualizations of black holes and their properties and geometry. And I just want to bring up another issue is that the Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium were working with the Juno Audubon Society to put up a planet bird walk at Twin Lakes. If people remember from the past, Michael Orlov and the artist Michael Bott painted the planets at the walk at Twin Lakes.
I do remember that,
And that paint has worn away. So we're applying for grants and have cooperation from the Juno Audubon Society to put up posts with permanent signs of the planets and a bird associated with the planet that has a similar property. So, for example, Mercury, the smallest planet, we'd associate with the smallest bird there at Twin Lakes, which would be the hummingbird. And Jupiter, the largest planet, we'd associate with the largest bird there, which I believe would be the trumpeter swan, possibly. So, I believe this is unique because most planet walks in Anchorage and Fairbanks and DC, the ones I've seen, are just the planets. So here we're associating the planet with a bird in the
local area. I love that
idea.
That's great.
And so we have two grants we've applied for, and Juno Audubon Society is putting up some money for this also. And if people are interested in donating, our website, mariedrakeplanetarium.org, we'll take donations for this planet bird walk.
All right, sounds great. Well, and more information you can get if you go tonight to the First Friday.
Exactly.
At the Marie Drake Planetarium, which sounds like it's going to be a blast. And they're taking requests now on the request line for the Marie Drake Planetarium.
Fly me to the moon or set the controls to the heart of the
there
sun.
There you go.
I think it's Frank Sinatra and Pink Floyd.
Yeah, that's good.
The planet bird walk is it's the nature of Juno.
Yeah.
You have friends in one organization and friends in the other organization, and you get together.
It is a great idea. Really great. I mean, I loved that. I loved how you just were walking on Twin Lakes and you just were learning passively without realizing you were learning just by marking off the steps. That was so great. But I think associating it with the common or even uncommon species that you might see at Twin Lakes. Such a great idea. Yeah.
So the sun would be the origin at the playground, and at the pump house is Neptune. Neptune is 3 billion miles.
Do we still
get
to count Pluto?
Well, you have to go. You have to get on the road.
Is that right? That's
where
Pluto
be at the Pioneer Home.
Wow. Maybe.
No, we're not going to include Pluto. We're
now Pluto's fallen off.
Yeah, well, that was the International Astronomical Union. We can blame for that. I think in 2009.
Well, thanks so much, you guys, for coming and letting us know about it. Once again, it's the Marie Drake Planetarium. The first Friday is happening tonight. And they, as they're saying, there's lots of projects that are happening there. It's a nonprofit organization, and you can find out more and become a member of a Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium if you want. And you can find out all about that either by going – the easiest way probably is just go tonight.
Yeah.
Go tonight and talk to the folks there, right?
Or go to the website.
Or the website.
If you have questions about the camp, you can email me at rosemary@mariedrakeplanetarium.org. And we'll be taking registrations through the weekend.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
Okay,
thanks. Right. Thanks, Andy.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon here from the KTO Studios. I'm Andy Klein, and up next, let's talk Juno Artist Gallery. It's a mandatory stop on the first Friday walk, and for anyone who's just interested in art in Juneau, it's such a great resource. And with me now is Lori Craig. Lori, thanks so much for coming in.
Andy, it's delightful to be here. Thanks for
and
having us.
Rick Kozlerich is with us as well. And Rick, you're the featured artist this month
that's
at the gallery.
Andy.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and this is fascinating. You have number one, you brought in an example of one of your paintings here, Conversation of Ravens. And I was saying it maybe is more like a lecture. I can't quite tell. One is talking and one is listening.
Yes.
I love it. It's so much. It's great. And it's just the way that you're able to imbue personality into the ravens. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
A nice winter scene. And but a little bit different take on what you're going to be doing for Juno Artist Gallery tonight, because you have done portraits of all the different artists. Is that right?
That's right. I wanted to show my appreciation for the gallery and for the tremendous, fantastic artists that are at the gallery. And so I started doing these portraits, started last year, and I have one or two. We have some new members, a couple of new members, and I need to do portraits of them. But as you walk in the front door, they're all there and their names are there, and you can kind of pick out your favorites.
That's great. Yeah, local celebrities.
Yes.
Local artistic celebrities here in Juneau. That's great, right? And is so like what you brought in here today is a beautiful and maybe slightly whimsical, fun nature scene. But is portraiture a concentration of yours?
It's portraiture is something that I enjoy doing, but I also enjoy doing nature scenes, cityscapes. I've done a couple of things of downtown Juneau and Mendenhall Glacier. Everything that I see around me, I like to try and create as a piece of art.
It's interesting because when you talk about both the work that you brought in here and portraits, you're talking about a subject, a living subject, but then there's also landscapes.
Yes.
Is there something there that translates?
Well, on the portraits I've done, each portrait has a background, and it is I tried to make it represent their landscapes, but tried to make it representational of that artist. So, for instance, I did a portrait of Lori, and she's got an affinity to the Mendenhall Glacier, and so I did a glacier in the background. Another photographer that we have, Cam, he has tremendous whale pictures. He's a guide, and so I put a whale's tail in the background of his portrait. So Davida Ryder, who is a fantastic artist, she does this sort of free-flowing, plain air type of landscapes, and I was able to recreate that style, and so that's the background of her portrait. So,
that's risky, right? I would think that's an interesting choice, right? I'm going to try to emulate.
Well,
Did you see it that way, or I mean, you're having fun, obviously.
I'm having fun, and it wasn't risky to me at all. Another member Kelsey did a portrait of her, and she does a very distinctive style. And so I was able to sort of emulate that style in the background. And
now, are some of your other works that aren't these as well also available and hanging during this
Yeah, month? Andy, I've got, for instance, I've got Crab Shack, which is sort of an iconic red building downtown. I have the intersection of Franklin and Front Street with the clock. I have Mindanao Glacier. I have a scene I painted of during the winter of Juneau with the looking from Douglas Island with the Aurora Borealis behind it. So these are all paintings, but they're all special to
me.
And
what medium do you work in? What's your process typically?
Well, I during COVID, during that time, I tried to get back. I had retired, and I tried to get back to doing oil paintings. And I don't know, something's wrong with me in that it was just too much clutter, and I just didn't have. So
you mean,
I read.
You mean the equipment needed
The tubes and the oil and the, you know, just a big mess. And so I read an article about David Hockney, who is a British painter, and he was talking about how he was starting to paint using his iPad. And that fascinated me, and so that's what I started doing. And I work with a program on the iPad called Procreate, and I'm able to create these paintings that it's pretty hard for you to tell the difference between what I've created and
so this, for instance,
That's a digital painting.
Wow, amazing.
And once it's the way that I want, and that way I get to control the color, the size. And once I'm happy with it, then I go and email it to printing trading company here in town, and they print those up for me.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And no fuss. Right?
Very clean.
Very clean. And that's interesting. But you had been trained, or you had worked in oils for most of your life.
For most of my life. Yeah. The mess always bothered me.
Is there something that you miss? Is there anything about the process or the results that you miss about working in oil?
No, not at all, because the vision I have in my imagination is immediately translated into a kind of a reality.
Wow.
And there's no really waiting for it. I mean, I don't have to wait for anything to dry.
Right. Yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for just explaining that little part of the process. And it sounds like an amazing show. Lori, is there other stuff we should cover? We got a minute or so left to talk about other things that going on at the Juneau Artist Gallery.
Yeah, I think what's so much fun and what Rick and I were just talking about is that we're now up to about 23 artists. And when we get new artists, they bring all this new energy to some of us that have been there for a long time. And we're having a great time. Very supportive. It's hard to believe that actually a bunch of artists can run a business as well as be friends with each other.
Prove the doubters wrong.
Yes, we can actually do it. And it really is fun. We have a great time supporting each other. I think we all feel that very much.
Well, you can feel it when you walk in. I mean, it's a welcoming atmosphere. Mm-hmm. There's someone behind the counter who is an artist that's hanging on the wall so they can talk to you in great depth. And the other thing is that because they're an artist, they're very interested in the process and the other art that's on the wall. You know, you're getting it from an artistic perspective, which I always just appreciate talking to people at the Juneau Artist Gallery because you know that they come from that perspective.
Yeah. One of the things that I tell our visitors is that, you know, we all look out at the same things and we all create something completely different. And I love seeing that, how creative people can be.
Well, the Juneau Artist Gallery, first Friday is happening. I mean, it's kind of starting now, right? Get over there now.
can we mention our outreach?
Sure. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, you go ahead.
Well,
just got about 20 seconds left. Sorry to do that.
We have a young student who has started to join us.
Oh,
and
great.
His work is featured. And Alan is going to be there with us tonight. So come on by and take a look at
his work. His work is fantastic.
Okay. So Alan, and come go meet Alan and see his work. All right. That's the Juneau Artist Gallery, first Friday tonight. Have a great Friday and have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy the weather.